BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. Had quite an interview yesterday we had Robert Morgan on with us, 100 Bible Verses That Made America. And we've heard from many who said, you know, we couldn't get through to your bookstore. Just want to make mention of the fact that you can try again here today. Their number 1-888-722-4829 or go to vcy.com. Well, ladies and gentlemen, when it comes to illegal immigration, sanctuary cities, counties, and whole states are on the increase. These are locations that put into laws, ordinances, or regulations various policies or even practices that obstruct immigration enforcement and shield criminals from immigration customs enforcement. Earlier this week, the Attorney General Bill Barr announced sanctions against these leftist local and state governments that obstruct the lawful functioning of our nation's immigration system. Well, here to discuss this and also what's happening at our borders, we welcome Jessica Vaughn. Jessica is the Director of Policy Studies for the Center for Immigration Studies with an area of expertise in immigration policy and operations. Prior to joining the center, she was a Foreign Service officer with the State Department. And Jessica, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
When it comes to sanctuary locations, the last update on your site indicates, and I counted them, 10 states, 134 counties, some 34 cities that have declared themselves as sanctuary areas for lawbreakers. And I'm sure this list has been growing. You're alarmed by this?
Yes, I am alarmed because, first of all, sanctuary policies are a danger to public safety because they inevitably result in the release of criminals who should be deported or turned over to ICE for deportation, but instead are sent back to the streets and the neighborhoods where they've been victimizing others. And secondly, because the sanctuary policies interfere with the enforcement of immigration laws generally, it's not okay under our constitutional system. Congress makes immigration laws, the executive branch is supposed to carry them out, and the states don't have a role in immigration policy.
I mean, isn't that what the Supremacy Clause is in this?
That's exactly what the Supremacy Clause is. The Constitution says there shall be a uniform rule of naturalization, and that meant we can't have 50 immigration laws, and we can't have states trying to overturn or nullification of federal laws, and it wouldn't be tolerated in any other form. I mean, can you imagine if states decided not to enforce environmental laws or tax laws or things like that, or to get in the way? It's not just not enforcing them; it's actually actively obstructing and shielding criminal illegal aliens from deportation. And that's just there is just no good argument in favor of these policies, and they need to be dealt with. And the best organization to deal with them is the federal government. It's their authority that is being usurped here. And so it was important for Attorney General Barr to kind of up the ante on the proliferation of these. There really aren't, I mean, relative to the entire United States, it's about 300 jurisdictions, but it's big jurisdictions, like big cities, New York City, Chicago, Philadelphia, the entire state of California. And these are places with lots of criminal aliens. So it's a problem.
And Jessica, I found it also very interesting on your list. There is the listing of New Mexico County jails declared themselves to be of sanctuary status, as is, according to your list, the Rhode Island Department of Corrections. Doesn't that seem odd to you?
Well, it's odd that any law enforcement agency would declare itself to be a sanctuary. There are different reasons for them. Usually the reason is political. In the case of, and it is political in Rhode Island, for sure. In the case of New Mexico, it's a little bit different because they basically are afraid of lawsuits being filed by the ACLU and other Open Borders anti-enforcement organizations that have convinced some federal judges and state judges that immigration enforcement is inherently racist and wrong and violating the human rights of people who are in the country illegally. And so they have persuaded some judges to declare that a local law enforcement agency holding someone for ICE is a civil rights violation. Now, I think that, you know, this is going to be further litigated in the federal court system, and I think it's not going to be found to hold up under the Constitution. But in the meantime, they've found some places, and so some sheriffs are you know, intimidated by the ACLU threatening to sue, and sometimes county attorneys will say, look, we can't indemnify you against lawsuits. You've got to stop cooperating with ICE because we're afraid that we're going to get sued by an illegal alien.
Jessica, we had a small taste from the State of the Union address that President Trump made on the consequences of communities that are defying federal immigration law. But if we could have you broaden the picture for us as to help us have a better understanding nationally, what impact is there upon our nation as a whole as a result of actions that are taken by these governmental bodies proclaiming themselves to be sanctuary areas?
Well, the first impact is that people are getting victimized by criminal aliens who should not be here to begin with and should not have been allowed to stay here. The human cost is really the worst part of this. But secondly, sanctuary policies serve as a magnet for illegal immigration and illegal settlement. And so taxpayers are then on the hook for providing services and dealing with the quality of life and economic issues that arise when there is a lot of illegal immigration. That's a big problem. And finally, though, it's really an affront to our legal immigration system. You know, we have millions of people in the world who can qualify through a family member sponsoring them or an employer. And when we look the other way at illegal immigration and we tolerate it and we tolerate this intrusion onto federal authority, that damages our entire legal immigration system as well.
And when we talk about the people getting victimized, lay that out for us. Tell us some scenarios that are taking place.
Well, one recent case that has gotten a lot of attention was in New York City, where a young man from Guyana, who was here, he was a visa overstay, had lived here illegally for years. He was arrested after he attacked his father with a broken coffee cup and was arrested by New York police. And ICE, through a program known as Secure Communities, finds out about every non-citizen who's arrested in the country, and they can take action against them, filed something called a detainer, asked New York police to hold this individual. They ignored it because they're a sanctuary. New York sanctuary policies forbid local police from cooperating with ICE. Even though local police want to cooperate with ICE, they can't because of New York's law. They let him go back to the streets. 6 weeks later, he was arrested after brutally and sexually assaulting a 92-year-old woman and killing her. She died in the hospital after the attack. This was a preventable death. If they had just cooperated with ICE to begin with, this guy would not have been on the streets. He would have been held by ICE and deported. Instead, he's allowed to stay here in defiance of our laws and killed someone. I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say that people literally are being killed because of sanctuary policies. And this is not an isolated incident. I could go through quite a few others, but the local politicians who do this for political reasons do not seem to care about the human cost of these policies.
And when you pointed out through your list and your comments earlier, we look at some of these jurisdictions in which they have these sanctuary policies. These are many of these areas I look at, and they are just riddled with crime and violence. And do they not see any connect here?
Well, that's one of the big myths that the anti-enforcement groups try to spread, is that sanctuary policies somehow make places safer. They certainly don't. I don't want to get sucked into an argument about, you know, some of the, you know, what goes into crime rates. But I don't, you know, it's not logical. Even one death or one additional crime victim that occurs because of sanctuary policies is one too many. I don't care if it's one or 100 or 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be facilitated by these local, politically motivated decisions. And it's really shameful that local politicians are really obstructing law enforcement that protects people in this way. And by the way, it's mostly immigrants who end up seeing their quality of life destroyed in their communities because, you know, the people that ICE is trying to arrest and deport are committing crimes in immigrant communities primarily.
Mm.
And so it's, you know, these groups that claim to speak for immigrants really are not advocating with the immigrant's best interests in mind.
We're speaking with Jessica Vaughn today from the Center for Immigration Studies. Just earlier this week, the Attorney General, William Barr, spoke before the National Sheriffs Association conference, and he announced some new actions against these sanctuary jurisdictions. Fill us in on what he announced.
The Attorney General first laid out a very powerful legal and public safety argument against sanctuary policies. And that was very important because it set out, you know, the whole Trump administration philosophy about why they need to be addressing this problem. What he announced was legal action that the Trump administration is taking against a few big sanctuaries. The state of New Jersey, which recently imposed a policy, King County in Washington State, which includes Seattle, where the county decided that they are not going to let ICE use the public airport there for the purposes of deportation. The administration already has a lawsuit against the state of California because of its state sanctuary policies. And the Attorney General announced that he is going to be reviewing every sanctuary policy for possible action against it. They're looking at withholding more federal funding. And this was really interesting. They're looking at actually prosecuting some of the most egregious cases of a public official who is harboring or shielding a criminal alien from ICE detection. And that is clearly against federal law. And I'm thinking about some of these cases of judges. There's one in Massachusetts. There was another in Oregon who let criminal aliens out the back doors of their courthouses so that they can avoid ICE and arrest. That is really kind of shocking behavior from a judge in particular. And so it's good to see that the Attorney General is looking at holding them accountable because it is against the law to do something like that.
We're going to take a quick break. Folks, it's amazing what is going on. I mean, actually letting them out the back door of the courtroom to avoid the ICE officials. How bizarre does this get? And the lengths that some are going to shield those who are breaking the law. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. We're talking about sanctuary cities and illegal immigration. Back in 1 moment.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, did the fossils take millions and millions of years to form?
Chris, we're all taught this, but in some ways this doesn't seem to make sense. We find millions and billions of well-preserved fossils, such as fish, showing scales and tiny bones. Yet when a fish dies, it floats to the surface or it sinks to the bottom where it's eaten by scavengers or quickly decays. In order for it to be preserved, it's got to be buried rapidly away from destructive processes. It seems obvious that fossils must be buried quickly by water action, and what can do that? I propose the Great Flood of Noah's Day. The fossils, by and large, are animals that died in the flood, laid down in sediments deposited by the flood. Yes, indeed, Chris, the flood is the key. It's the flood mentioned back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Jessica Vaughn is our guest here today on Crosstalk from the Center for Immigration Studies. She's Director of Policy Studies there. She also is a Foreign Service Officer with the State Department. Their website, cis.org, for the Center for Immigration Studies, at cis.org. Jessica, we were discussing the Attorney General William Barr as he spoke before the National Sheriff's Association conference earlier this week, and talking about some steps that the Department of Justice is taking. There was another aspect that he brought up as well about holding judges accountable. Tell us what he had to say on that.
Yes, this was another really encouraging thing in the Attorney General's speech. He specifically mentioned that he wanted to address the problem of local and state judges and prosecutors who deliberately go easy on criminal non-citizens who are before them in proceedings for crimes that they've committed. Because when you commit a crime, if you're here illegally, you're deportable just because of that. But if you're in the country maybe on a visa, or you have DACA, which is the amnesty for the Dreamers, or if you have a green card, if you commit a certain level of crime, you lose your privileges of living here and can be sent home. Some judges and prosecutors deliberately go easy on non-citizens before them so that they can avoid deportation. And it amounts to a double standard of justice and a double standard of accountability for criminal behavior, where non-citizens are treated more lightly than citizens would be in the same situation. And the Attorney General quite rightly has said, you know, this cannot stand. That's not okay to be doing that. You can't be giving someone a lenient sentence just because you don't want them deported. It's, again, the injection of politics and personal opinions and emotion into our criminal justice system that benefits non-citizens and is not fair.
I'd like to circle back to something you said, Jessica, in the first segment of the program here, because the lengths some are going to protect lawbreakers is amazing to me. You made reference to an airport that is forbidding the deportation of aliens using their international airport?
Yeah, how is that even possible? I think a lot of people must be wondering. But King County in Washington State has barred ICE from using the airport there because they were using it for deportations. I mean, they just said, sorry, you can't have access to this airport, in the same way that many county jail systems have, usually because of state or local sanctuary laws imposed on them, will not allow ICE to enter the jail to interview inmates who are in the country illegally. And there is a lawsuit in Massachusetts right now where two local prosecutors have gone before a judge and asked the state judge to bar ICE from courthouses, which are public buildings, because of sanctuary policies, ICE can't get in the jails sometimes, so they have to go to courthouses. If they know an illegal alien has a court date, they're going to show up there because they are pretty sure they're going to be there at that time and place, and it's a safe location where you can't bring a weapon, and so that's where they want to go make the arrest, for the safety of the public and for the safety of the officer. But now certain prosecutors in Massachusetts want ICE barred from courthouses. It's absurd.
Well, when the Attorney General was making that address earlier this week, he indicated that there are some jurisdictions that are becoming, he used the term, more aggressive in undermining immigration authorities. Is this what he was referring to, these things, or did he have other things in mind that you're aware of?
Well, I think he's also referring to, I mean, the longer this goes on, the more empowered the open borders politicians feel about defying federal law. If he were to just sit back and watch, as the Obama administration did, really almost encouraging sanctuary policies, then more and more places are going to do it. Without consequences, they're going to continue to allow these policies, whether it's just to defy Trump or because they, you know, are sympathetic to illegal aliens. For whatever reason, they're getting away with it and getting more and more egregious. The state of New York announced or passed a law in June that gives driver's licenses to illegal aliens, mm-hmm. but also barred all of the DHS agencies from accessing their motor vehicle records, which is something that the Border Patrol does routinely so that they can screen vehicles coming into the country from either Canada or Mexico. So they're just getting, they're never placated. It's, you know, if you let them get away with one kind of sanctuary policy, they're only going to try to expand it.
Yeah. Matter of fact, in New York, one of the states that just declared themselves to be a sanctuary state, but last Thursday, so we have the Department of Homeland Security announcing that they had kicked residents of New York out of its Trusted Travelers program. What is that program, and how does this impact New York?
Well, the Trusted Traveler programs are for are something that people can apply for, U.S. citizens only. You can apply so that you are willing to undergo a much more extensive background check, including criminal history, and also you're under the law that Congress wrote, you can't have a lot of drunk driving convictions or serious traffic offenses like hit and run or things like that, you know, vehicular manslaughter or something like that. You would be disqualified from these expedited entry programs so that you don't have to wait in a long line coming in from overseas. Like, you can kind of bypass the regular customs line. It's an express lane. So when Customs and Border Protection got kicked out of the motor vehicle databases, they could no longer do the screening of people's backgrounds that is required by law to let people into the Trusted Traveler programs. So they said, sorry, we're just not, you know, nobody in New York can participate because we can't do the required vetting anymore. Well, I mean, that's a logical consequence of what New York has done. New York is claiming that it's politically motivated and the president's trying to get back at Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo and all this nonsense, when it's really just a fact of, you know, they can't do what's required by law. Mm-hmm. And so now 80,000 New Yorkers were denied access to the Trusted Traveler program, and 150,000 more have been told, don't even, you know, we're not going to process your application.
Wow.
And they're all up in arms about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the government they elected that led to this.
Well, and increasingly we're seeing states that are allowing illegal aliens to obtain driver's licenses and prevent the federal authorities from having access to those motor vehicle records. This week we saw Virginia lawmakers were the latest that would allow illegals to obtain driver's licenses. And I'd like you to just address this matter further, because one of the arguments we so often hear from state governments is that, well, this is going to make driving safer. What's your response?
Oh, that's nonsense. It has nothing to do with roadway safety. It has everything to do with documenting the undocumented and giving them a document that they can use to get a job, to basically live here as if they're here legally. It's not about safety. It's about providing them with cover. But the problem is that every state who has done this has found that state becomes a magnet for fraudulent applicants from illegal aliens living all over the country will flock to these states, pretend to be residents of that state, and get a license. It's often in a new identity. It also benefits criminals who, for whatever reason, want to create a new identity to hide who they are. It basically trashes the integrity of our main form of identification. And they get on, you know, because of motor voter, people can end up on, illegal aliens can end up on the voting rolls. It causes all kinds of problems. They can collect more public benefits. This is a problem. And also it can allow terrorists to take advantage of these states and get identities. The 9/11 hijackers had 36 different state driver's licenses.
Wow.
19 people. And some of them were Virginia licenses, and you would think New York, of all places, would remember this lesson, but they've forgotten or don't think it's important anymore.
Prior to the Attorney General making this announcement earlier this week, have there been any lawsuits filed against any of these jurisdictions, as cities, counties, or states?
There have been a few here and there that have not succeeded for one reason or another. Some states hide behind sovereign immunity. There is no provision in federal law right now that permits someone who suffered harm because of a sanctuary policy to seek any kind of compensation for it. There have been some bills introduced in the Senate by senators from Pennsylvania and North Carolina to give people what they call a private right of action, to say, look, if you release a criminal alien who goes on to harm someone, that victim could sue that jurisdiction. And I think that might be the only thing that some of these that these jurisdictions are going to listen to. I also think, you know, there's been some talk recently in financial circles about downgrading the bond ratings of municipalities that are sanctuaries because of it's a governance issue. It's potentially, you know, a drain on the public fisc, and it's a public safety problem, and these are less governable jurisdictions that should not be considered good investments. These kinds of financial sticks, and maybe withholding some federal funds as well, are the only thing that the sanctuaries are going to pay attention to. They won't do it for the right reason,
right,
just to keep
right.
everyone safe. They'll only do it if they are getting threatened with being whacked in some way.
Yeah, and so we have the left-biased media jumping on the bandwagon against the Department of Justice, calling this a legal assault. To me, that's over the top. I mean, isn't that what the Justice Department is supposed to do?
It's not exactly. They have to defend their authority. I mean, when someone breaks a law, and in this case, sanctuary jurisdictions are violating federal law, Section 8 U.S. Code 1373 outlaws sanctuary policies, then we have to hold them accountable for that. They have to be addressed somehow.
Do you believe the problem is being fixed at the borders?
The border situation has improved greatly. There is no denying it. Apprehensions at the border are down about 90% since May of last year, and we really have turned a corner on this problem of people showing up and, you know, pretending to seek asylum, hoping that they're going to be released into the country and know that no one's ever going to come looking for them. That has been largely turned around, both with policy changes and working with Mexico and the Central American countries, but it's a very tenuous solution because if, say, Mexico changes their mind and decides not to help us anymore, or a rogue federal judge decides that, you know, the Remain in Mexico policy that's been so successful is, you know, going to be blocked, or, you know, the next president in some future time may decide to reverse these policies. So these are not permanent solutions. They're working, but really Congress has to make changes to our law to make sure that we continue to see improvement at the border.
Okay, well, we've got a couple more questions before we open phone lines. Jessica Vaughn is with us today from the Center for Immigration Studies, their website. Folks, if you want to stay informed on so many critical issues here, their website, cis.org, cis.org. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
How is your marriage relationship? Do you have a spirit-filled marriage? Is your marriage one in which the lost world can look in and see Christ represented? Many of us know that we are called to have such a marriage, but fail to make it happen, perhaps due to lack of knowledge on the topic. In the booklet, What Does a Spirit-Filled Marriage Look Like?, biblical counselor Susan Heck draws principles from the book of Ephesians. She presents 13 doctrines that guide a marriage that will bring glory to God. You'll learn about humility, forgiveness, generosity, unity, and much more. You'll also learn not only to know these principles, but how to grow them in your marriage relationship. VCY is offering one copy of this booklet for a donation of $6, 5 copies for a donation of $24, or 10 copies for $42. Just call 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
We're talking sanctuary cities today, illegal immigration, what's happening at the borders. Jessica Vaughn is with us today for the Center for Immigration Studies. And Jessica, President Trump, he's emphasized, and he did at the State of the Union, the number of miles of border wall that have been constructed. He's spoken of many more miles to come. Do you see that border wall is making an impact?
Yes. Having barriers at the border definitely helps. It helps especially in areas that can be patrolled, because there are always going to be a few people who make it over, but they're not able to make it over in large numbers or anywhere near as easily, so that they can be caught by the Border Patrol, and we don't need as many Border Patrol agents in those areas. And they direct the flow of people to places where they can be easily apprehended. So they definitely help a lot. And, you know, building more wall is an investment in controlling illegal immigration in the future, and is far cheaper than the cost of having all of these illegal aliens in our country.
We've got a number of primaries that have started, most recently New Hampshire, South Carolina coming up. We look at all the states coming up here on Super Tuesday, and then, of course, our eyes are set on the November elections here as well. Comment as to the impact this election is going to have on the matter of our on immigration, border control, et cetera.
Well, I can't think of any important issue today in which there is a greater contrast between President Trump and whoever the Democratic candidate is going to be. There's no question that the Democratic Party has veered very sharply left on this issue, which is a shame, really. It wasn't always that way. At one time, Bernie Sanders was very concerned about immigration's effect on job opportunities for Americans, and that has gone by the wayside because of pressure of certain groups to, to be really towards open borders. And even the so-called moderate candidates like Klobuchar and Biden have walked away from a position of moderation on immigration. They're running on a massive amnesty, on abolishing ICE, or scaling back ICE's ability to enforce the law to the point where they might as well be abolished. They think that, you know, our border should be open to anyone who says they're seeking asylum from anywhere in the world. They don't want to send anyone home who's already here illegally. They think, you know, more is always better than less in terms of immigration. And kind of isolated from the views of regular Americans on this issue, who see problems in our immigration system. We want to have an legal immigration system. We're proud of our tradition of immigration, but it's possible to have too much of a good thing, and we certainly want the immigration to be legal. So I don't see them getting any political advantage to an open borders, anti-enforcement stance on immigration, but they seem to think it's working for them, at least in the primaries. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the general election if they walk back some of that. But I guess it depends on who the nominee is.
And not to mention that only, but also the makeup of Congress, because as you mentioned earlier, it's the House and Senate, it's Congress that needs to act on immigration policy.
Well, that's right. There's only so much the president can do on immigration. As we were talking, we need some fundamental changes to our laws. We need to do more to prevent illegal employment and to discourage employers from hiring illegal aliens who are here, you know, taking job opportunities from Americans and legal immigrants. And we need to look at our legal immigration system and how many immigrants we're admitting and, how many are family versus employment versus humanitarian. I think that we do need to have more, admit a higher percentage of people who have skills and job offers here, rather than just chain migration based on family relationships. There's no question, but the numbers really matter also. We're now getting more than 1 million legal immigrants every year and about 1 million temporary workers new every year, and that has an effect on the labor market, and it's creating disadvantages for Americans who are competing directly with immigrants for jobs, and it's a problem for taxpayers as well, because most of the immigrants that are being admitted today are working in jobs that don't pay a lot, and so they are dependent on certain public welfare programs. So we do need an overhaul, but the answer is definitely not massive amnesty, it can't be always more immigration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our phone number here, listeners, if you have a question, brief comment, 800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. Jessica, we're soon going to be undertaking a census in our country, and we understand the apportionment of House seats for each state, as well as the drawing of district lines, is being based on population, not citizenship. Something seems wrong here.
It is wrong when someone can get elected to Congress with, a much smaller share of actual voters in their district than someone in a different part of the country, and that member of Congress can come to believe that they represent the non-citizens as much as the citizens. It's distorting the distribution of votes. I mean, it's really, that ends up being a dilution of an American citizen's vote in a way. And if we did not count non-citizens in the census, we would find a slightly different distribution of members of Congress in different states. You would have some states having fewer, like especially California, fewer members of Congress than they otherwise have, because we're giving them power by counting, power and influence and representation in the U.S. Congress by counting all of the non-citizens in California, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason why some politicians are all for more immigration, because they know it's coming to their district, yeah, and that makes it easier for them.
We have Terry calling in from Milwaukee. Terry, you're on the air.
Aside from the people who are looking for cheap labor, they're saying, oh, if they weren't hiring and wanted cheap labor, we wouldn't have them coming here. But besides them, who are the basic different categories of people for reasons for wanting illegal immigration in this country, even if there were no crimes? I mean, what other groups of people are mainly pushing this, and why, other than we want cheap labor?
Well, that's a good question. Obviously, the employers are the biggest and most powerful lobby against enforcing our borders, but also some politicians, as we've been discussing. There are now the labor unions have really departed from their historical feelings about immigration, and instead of viewing immigration as more competition for American workers and driving wages down, now they see immigrants as their new membership, because they've lost a lot of Americans over time in the union movement. You see a lot of governments, state and local governments, sometimes see immigration as an answer to the loss of population. But, I mean, my feeling is, gosh, if you can't keep an area good enough for Americans to live there, why should we expect immigrants to live there? I mean, it's a little bit twisted, I think.
Well, thank you, Terry. Good question. Let's go to Ed in Spencer, Tennessee. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'd like to know what would be the ballpark figure of the cost to the taxpayers that illegal immigration is every year.
Okay. Thank you, Ed.
It is about, there are different studies on this, but it is somewhere between $25 and $50 billion a year at the federal level, and that does not count the state taxpayer expenses, which is really the larger share, because state taxpayers pay for schools and half of Medicaid costs that are going to illegal aliens, and often public housing money. It's in the tens of billions of dollars every year.
Wow.
And that's after accounting for any taxes that might have been paid by illegal aliens in the form of sales taxes, for example.
Thank you, Ed. Becky is next. Madison, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hi. Great. Hello?
Becky, you're on the air.
Okay.
Becky, please go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. I was just wondering, I don't usually listen to this radio station, and I noticed that it was Christian-based. It's Christian-based, and I was wondering what you think Jesus would think of the immigration policy and what would Jesus' approach be to immigration?
Yeah, well, thank you. And we covered a full program on this, a Christian look at immigration. We had Sam Rohr with us from the American Pastors Network August 29th of last year in this regard. But indeed, we see even in the book of Acts the importance of the borders that were laid down. Jessica, I don't know if you care to address the issue at all, but
yeah, I would actually, and it struck me last Sunday when I was in the pew listening to a reading from the prophet Isaiah, said that yes, of course we must be kind to strangers and to the poor among us, but we must never forget also to look out for our own, and I think that is an important lesson for considering immigration policy, is that we want to have immigration. We understand that people want to come here from other countries, and we're proud of our country and glad that we're such a strong country that people want to live here. But when it gets to the point where it's causing harm to Americans, that's a policy that the government can control and needs to do something about. So, you know, if we're seeing Americans denied job opportunities or seeing their wages depressed, it's not the wealthy that are suffering from too much immigration. It's people who, for whatever reason, haven't had the chance to get a college degree, are working with their hands in jobs that don't pay as much. They're the ones seeing the wage depression, and they're the ones who most need a fair and living wage. Yeah. And we can't forget about them.
In the book of Acts, chapter 17, verse 26, it says, "And hath made of one blood all nations of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation." In other words, the borders of their habitation. And I just, again, want to refer you back to the Crosstalk program that we did August 29th, and we did a full program, full hour on the Christian look at immigration. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Eddie in Texas. You're on the air.
Hello.
Go ahead, Eddie.
Yes, brother. I just want to comment on our border wall, that it is very, very effective. I live, like, I'd say a couple of miles from the border wall, and it finishes right close to our house, but was an extended a little bit more all the way to Laredo, Texas. Hmm. And the other comment I want to make, brother, is that most of the drugs that it needs to be focused really on the sectors, you know, where we have the immigration stations where people are crossing in their vehicles. Mm-hmm. You know, these cartels, they're very, very smart on how they're crossing their drugs towards U.S. They're using different type of methods how to disguise the drugs. And I just heard about yesterday in that newspaper that this guy was crushing so much methamphetamine, and there were just a bunch of boxes of lollipops. And
tell you what, Eddie, we're up against a break, but I'm going to we'll address the drug issue here after the break. So listen on your radio. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. We continue our series now on the dangers of discourse or dialogue with the cultural Marxist. As we've been saying, there's nothing wrong with having a debate. But when you have a discourse or dialogue, you're trying to merge your worldview with theirs and find common ground. You can't do that. And when you do that, involved in discourse or dialogue with them, you fall into trap and danger number 8 in our list. You have allowed your cultural Marxist enemy to define the language. You're giving validity to their language, like woke, white privilege, social justice. You're allowing them to control the narrative. You're setting up the conflict. You're walking into a trap, and you're setting yourself up to be marginalized and your values marginalized. And ultimately, what you're doing is you're giving legitimacy to their values. You're saying, I'll talk with you and try to find common ground because there is some value to what you believe. And guess what? You have surrendered to the psychological process and submitted yourself to all 8 dangers. For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House.
Jessica Vaughn is with the Center for Immigration Studies. Again, their website is cis.org, cis.org. Just before the break, Jessica, we had Eddie calling in from Texas. He says he lives near that border wall. He finds it to be very effective, but he did bring up the drug-related issues. Your comments on the porous nature of how we've seen drugs enter this nation.
Yes, it is true that the vast majority of illicit narcotics enter from over our southern border. And unfortunately, the number of seizures at the border, which they take as a measure of how effective enforcement is and how many drugs are actually getting through, has been going up over the last year. And that is something that worries our Homeland Security officials right now. We're seeing a lot of fentanyl come from across from Mexico, and that's a deadly drug that is really a scourge in a lot of communities around the country. And if we could control the border, it would really put a dent in that problem. And that's why what happens at the border is really of importance to us, you know, in communities all over the country. Every county is a border county, because what comes across that border is not staying in the border area. It's coming to our communities all over the country.
Yeah.
And that's why we should all care about border security.
Let's go next to Mount Laurel, New Jersey. We have Barbara calling. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm from the great sanctuary state of New Jersey.
Hmm.
Last year, they passed a bill to give illegal aliens driver's license. New Jersey has a very strict 6-point system of documentation, even for just renewing your license, to prove who you are. And they just gave them their license. The Real ID is being required in New Jersey by the fall of this year, and it automatically registers you to vote. And if you don't want to vote, if you don't want to be registered to vote, you have to opt out. This year, they've also introduced a bill into the legislation. It has not passed yet to give illegals free higher education.
Wow.
Lucky you.
Oh, yeah. We're so happy here.
Wow. That's a shame. The identity issue is a big problem, because while American citizens and legal permanent residents can all prove our identity with secure documents that can be verified, they're now accepting, states like New Jersey are now allowing someone to come in with a foreign-issued document that may or may not be valid, may or may not belong to that person, and there's no way to check on it, and there's no way to train the driver's license clerks to know if something is valid or not.
Hmm.
So, you know, maybe some people, you know, that is their true identity, but we have no way of knowing, and it's the ones who are using false identities that are the big problem.
Thank you, Barbara, for calling. Mike in Glidden, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Thank you for this opportunity to ask your guest about a grave concern I have regarding President Trump's proposal to banish 30,000 Hmong from our country. I grew up in Appleton, Wisconsin, where many of the Hmong families were welcomed years ago. I've worshipped next to them in our Catholic church. And they also have fought bravely on our side in recent wars. So I'm wondering if I can get her perspective on that. Right.
Thank you. Mike?
Yes, it's true. Many of the Hmong were admitted as refugees because of the fact that they fought side by side with U.S. soldiers in the Indochina conflict. I am not aware of any policy to ban people from Cambodia, whether Hmong or otherwise. So I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that proposal from the administration.
Well, these are Hmong that are already in our country, and it was something proposed within just the last week to send them back.
Hmm.
Yes, I'm sorry, I can't help you with that.
Okay.
I just haven't seen anything on that.
Mike, thank you for the call. David in Parma, Idaho, you're on the air.
Okay.
David, please go ahead.
My question was, the illegal aliens come over, they're at a disadvantage. they don't have, and they're illegal. And it's harder for them to get a job than regular people. And they fall prey to garbage that entangles them into prostitution, dope peddling, and just all sorts of illegal activity with a threat of being exported. I wonder if maybe their proponents are heavily involved in illegal activities, such as needing more people to fill their prostitute houses or their...
Tell you what, is sex trafficking a concern with all of this, Jessica?
Oh, absolutely. If we're looking the other way or making it too easy for illegal immigration to happen, of course the criminal enterprises are going to take advantage of it. And I think we have to be all understand that illegal immigration today is basically, it happens as a form of organized crime. No one can just, except overstays who, you know, come in on a visa and just stay over, that's an individual act. But anyone crossing the border has to pay a smuggling organization that is in cahoots with the drug cartels and often is going to be extorted or expected to participate in other criminal activity to support the smuggling organization and the cartel once they're in the United States, whether it's serving as a drug mule or whether people are kidnapped into prostitution or other types of things that go on to further the criminal activity of the cartels. It is not something benign where someone just walks across the Rio Grande illegally. You're paying a smuggler, and you're enriching these criminal cartels that care nothing about human well-being. They care only for enriching themselves and will sell drugs or smuggle anything to make money.
Thank you for the call, and I apologize to others. We have simply run out of time. Jessica Vaughn, our guest here today from Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org. Jessica, thank you for your research and diligence on so many issues and certainly carving out time to join us on the program today.
You're very welcome.
Again, folks, the website CIS.org. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.